This podcast is made in association with Wave Motion Canon. You can contact us on Twitter at WarriDeshow or email us at warrideshow@gmail.com. If you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes, like, subscribe, follow and share.
WarriDeshow.
Hello everyone, welcome to WarriDeshow, the only podcast on the internet that consistently fails to update consistently. Yeah, that's a bit of a tongue twister for you there. But in aid of actually getting some more content out, we're coming up with something a little different this time around, something a bit unusual for ourselves. So normally, for those of you who are familiar with the show, what we tend to do is we tend to have our very in-depth feature-length looks at particular shows from all across time and all across genres. It's just more of a democratic process of picking anything that might take our fancy, from the great to the absolutely bloody dreadful. You're probably all familiar with this skit by now. But what we decided to do this time around is we're actually going to look at a currently airing show as it airs and release our thoughts on the show episode by episode, week by week. Joining me for this particular endeavour is none other than the Mr. Subtle Doctor.
I'm ready to break new ground.
We always are. We always are.
This is a completely new thing that no one's ever thought of doing before.
Nah. This is absolutely innovative. Completely, you know, unheard of in the world of anime podcasting, or in general. A week-by-week commentary or an episode-by-episode commentary is completely and utterly new. I swear blind. And also, I'm now going to reveal that I'm a flat earther.
One small step for weebs. One giant leap for nerdkind.
So, the topic, the show that we've decided to have a look at, although it is currently airing and is already more than half done, we're going to play catch up with it, but we felt it was worth discussing because of how good it is a show that I think a lot of people are quite excited about and enjoying a lot, which is Recovery of an MMO Junkie.
Yes, indeed.
I don't actually know the Japanese titles at hand.
What I can find is Netoju no Susume, the recommendation of the wonderful virtual life.
That's the one. So, in other words, it's a prequel to The Matrix.
Thank God it's not that. Oh, boy.
The reverse red pill.
Man, Jesus.
But no, it's
I'm
it's
happy
not...
that we're... Can I just say, like, the genesis of this idea was that I feel like we've been just watching and subjecting our listeners to our commentary about a fair bit of subpar anime lately.
Yep.
From the disappointing to the outright horrific, we've been doing a fair bit of bad anime, and we have a couple episodes about good anime, full-length episodes being edited, but I wanted to get some more content out there, as you said, about a good show, and this, I think, is a very good show, at least up to this point.
Well, as you say, Doc, it is a very good show so far, and Lord knows I've been burned by that earlier this year.
No, boy.
I grind my teeth a little bit thinking about that, but I won't mention it. But on to the show itself. So Recovery of an MMO Junkie is a 10-episode show, and the premise is simply this. We have a lady, she's 30, she's single, she quits her job, and then becomes a NEET. And for those of you unfamiliar with the acronym, it is not in education, employment, or training, so you're doing nothing productive. Bit of a derisive term, especially in England.
Can I ask you a question? Do they use the term, did you say divisive term in England?
Derisive.
Derisive. Do they use the term neat in the UK?
They do.
Oh, see, I had never heard it before I got involved in anime culture. It's not, you know, maybe it's my age, but it's not a term that I had heard ever thrown around.
I think it's been used in some subset of employment statistics. I have certainly heard of it before, though, and that's where I know of the acronym from.
Gotcha.
So I was briefly a NEET for a time. Briefly, thankfully. Ugh, that was an awful period. But anyway, so I wasn't playing World of Warcraft then either. So that's the premise, really, at the start of it. Marioka quits her job and starts playing this MMO that she's found called Fruits de Mer, or Fruits of the Sea, or... Well, there's not really much seeing it. There's a little bit of it, but
I like the way that the Japanese characters pronounce fruits in the it's just like fruit de mer. Like it almost sounds French.
To be fair, mer is the French word for sea, so you're onto something there. But this show, right, when you think of that premise on face value, there are any number of ways that you can take this. You could have it be a comedy. You could have it be something very serious. Or you could have it be all sorts of different things. For the first episode, at least, I think what surprised me the most was that it manages to blend a nice bit of comedy with it, also with a surprising amount of sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of heart to this show, but the humor's also really welcome. Like, I unfortunately watched one episode of Umaru earlier this year, like about a month and a half back, which someone quite appropriately described to me as anime Garfield. And I found it insufferable. And on paper, you've not got too dissimilar a premise here. You've got someone who spends all their time on a computer doing the... Well, to be fair, Mario was not neat, but she was far worse than that. So you got that kind of comedy setup in Mario, which I hated. And there's a comedy setup here, but it's actually genuinely funny. And I care about what's going on, which is the most staggering thing.
Yeah, I think the point of view of the author was really influential in, like, just... the fact that this has such a different tone from things like Umaru or other shows that might have neat protagonists. This is based on a Jose manga.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, written by a lady for ladies. For not like teenage either, for adult women. This comic book is for that demo, and that gives it kind of a different flavor than you might be normally used to with a show with a title like this. I mean, I know when I saw it come up in the sort of glut of shows that were airing in the fall, I thought to myself, okay, great. Here's an otaku bait show. Like, I get aggravated at people for, you know, judging things too quickly. And of course, here I was, giant hypocrite, like just seeing a title of a show and completely writing it off. Thankfully, a friend in Discord mentioned it and said, hey, you should give this a shot. It's Jose. You dig it.
I have to say, like, I had a similar thought to you. Like, when I read the premise, like, when it started airing a couple of weeks back, I just thought, so it's Sword Art Mom line then.
Which is a top-tier pun.
Which I was like, no thanks. I'll skip this. Dodge that bullet. And once again, I have to, you know, hold my hands up and say I presumed too much. And I have done that before. I've done that before with shows we've watched, shows we've reviewed here, where I've just said, this is going to be bleh. And then next thing you know, I watch it like, oh,
yeah,
that was pretty brilliant, actually. Quite impressed.
Self-defense mechanism. What are you going to do? So what is this episode actually about?
Well, much as any other episode one is, we get the premise set up, but there's a nice couple of things happening in it that establish its thesis. Because I think the show does also have a bit of a message behind it, or something rather that an idea it raises and then is challenging or testing. So to give some more context here, in the opening, by the way, the opening minute or two of this show is pretty brutally effective, because we have Morioka come home and she just comes in her flat, her apartment, which is just like a studio bedroom affair kind of thing. One I've actually lived in similar to that in the past. She just says, I'm home. There's nothing there. It's so Spartan. And then she just collapses on bed. And I'm like...
Just a cat clock. And and she shows her appreciation for the flowers that her, you know, employment gave her on her last day of work by immediately chucking them in the garbage.
Yep, she's quit her job and immediately gets rid of those. And I just forced myself in this opening minute. I was just like, I just want to give her a hug.
I know.
I was just like, you poor woman.
She seems so trodden down.
Yes, absolutely. So what she does is the following day, which is contrasted with people waking up and going to school. That's the thing we see outside.
Mm-hmm.
She gets a PC and tries to log back into an MMO that she played previously, but the MMO is now being closed down. It's out of business. So this is what leads her to picking up the MMO we mentioned earlier, Fruits of the Mare. She gets into the game world and decides, okay, as a former World of Warcraft player, here's the in-joke for you people who do play World of Warcraft. This is like, you know, starting out in Goldshire and deciding your first thing to do will be to fight Hogger. Bad move. You know, you don't you don't come out of the starting gate and fight something that will kill you in one hit.
The cutest first boss.
Yeah. I would have thought Morioka would have like remembered that. Like, oh yeah, maybe I should level up first. Nah, I can take this. I got this. I mean, given the fact that her character is literally armed with a stick, that's the starting weapon.
So good. We should talk about her character, though, and how she created it, and the fact that it's significant for this show anyway, that she decides to be a man.
Yes.
In fact, the first episode is called Woman IRL, Man Online.
Correct. Not personally not being a woman, but I can attest to having heard and seen firsthand the fact that if you tend to play a woman online or reveal your identity as a woman online, you'll just get all sorts of shit sent your way. I mean, there's that age-old phrase, unfortunately, which is tits or GTFO. Ugh, Jesus Christ. So it's not surprising to me, as someone who, you know, she's starting to play this game as escapism, having just come out of a, like, you know, a arduous, like, downtrodden job, that she would play a male character.
Yeah.
Because it's an immediate deflection of any of that sort of rubbish that would get sent her way otherwise.
And he's a hot guy. Like, and she makes the comment right after, my hot male character complete.
Yeah.
Like, and there's a couple other moments in the episode where you just sort of see, like, she falls for adorable anime girls, like, she wants to create a hot guy, meet other hot guys. Like, she's got a little bit of that sort of Fujoshi fandom in her, for sure. Like, it's, which I find completely hilarious, and is also entirely different from her, like, real life personality and everything.
Yeah.
Also, you made a comment in the chat when we were watching it about the names that she rejected. The name that she goes with is Hayashi.
Lightning of Black Darkness. What a title.
Oh.
What a title.
Heavy Nightmare. I quite liked. That was a great one. And I was like, maybe she's just thinking about, like, how she felt about her previous job.
Heavy Nightmare.
And that's where all the names were coming from.
Oh, God.
They were so bad.
They're all terrible in a great way.
When they're translated, they're so bad. Perhaps they're, like, still sort of cheesy, but not quite as cheesy to the Japanese ear. But the translation is just amazing.
It's great. It's fantastic. So the thing is, though, right, and I admit I am going to have to slightly spoil the fact that I, of course, have seen the other episodes ahead of time because I've already watched some of them.
How dare you?
But what the show is establishing here is that appearance is important.
Yeah.
But, which we'll say for the later episode of this, it's important in many different ways and many different areas. So, Morioka unfortunately cannot kill the boss, which looks like a Rattatat from or Rattatar rather from is it a Rattatar or Rescake? I can't remember which one. Whichever one it was, the one with the giant teeth. It looks exactly like it. She can't kill it. So after like respawning five times or so, she is found by another character, another player named Lily. And again, about appearance, you mentioned before cute anime girls, like, one of the things I find so fascinating about this is that Lily is, as designed, absolute grade A waifu material for those who are interested in that kind of stuff. She like, if you told me that the person who designed her, like, who drew her and came up with the character concept was the same person who did, say, Rem from ReZero,
right,
I completely buy that.
Yeah.
Because it feels very much like that. But think about it. Who actually designed Lily in-universe? The person playing her.
Correct.
And that will have indeed become very important later on. So Lily's like pink haired, got bows in her hair, like she plays a healer as well. And tell you now for free, support classes in any MMO, like, oh my god, you poor people. I subbed a healer for a time in World of Warcraft, and I enjoyed doing it, except for the times when the tank would like do something stupid like, dare I use an old meme, stand in the fire. Like, tank, like, heal me, healer, I'm dying. And I'm like, you're the one fucking up here. Move. But yeah, you get a lot of shit if you play a support character and you're just meeting random people online. I can attest that fact.
That's got to be not very fun for folks to do in certain games.
Believe me, my old guildmates, like, they mentioned many a time, those that played healing classes, how often they had to deal with that in pickup groups, how they generally, they were just useless. And they started giving shit afterwards.
I found it hilarious, by the way, that when Lily heals... Why is his name escaping me?
Hayashi.
When Lily heals Hayashi, his torn clothes also are magically mended.
Indeed.
It's just fantastic.
It's great.
It was a wonderful thing that they did.
The magic spares no expense. So, like, with Lily's help, Hayashi slays the boss, and they become friends. And poor Morioka, right? The anime cuts back to actually her in real life occasionally to show her reactions firsthand to things that are going on, some of which are amazing because they're quite funny. Like, she yes. bangs her head against the desk at one point saying, I'm never going to lose my virginity as a man. Like, and then she just looks at the camera and goes, oh yeah, right, I can't do that anyway. Oops, silly me. And she's got some amazing faces. Like, also when trying to think of a gift to get for Lily later, she's just like looking with like one finger on her chin. And it's just great.
Yes.
The facial expressions in this show, both the really exaggerated ones and the more subtle ones, are fantastic.
Love it. Love it. And when she's like, rubbing her hands together with like sort of evil glee when these like awkward or cute moments are happening, like they're both going inside the anemone or something.
Yeah.
Just good.
You get the feeling that Morioka, like, obvious metaphor though, it is like one of the first things Morioka does when she actually gets back to her apartment after she quits the job is to take her hair tie out and just let it run like down past her shoulders, literally letting her hair down. A bit on the nose, perhaps, but that seems to follow through with her actions later on. But admittedly, we haven't seen anything of her workplace prior to this. But you get the impression she's starting to get more comfortable with herself and starts to, like, you know, let some of her eccentricities out.
Yes.
To go back to Lily briefly, though, with regards to design, we mentioned, like, you know, how Morioka picked a male character and then designed him in such a way as to be aesthetically pleasing to her.
Mm-hmm.
We later find out in this episode that Lily, as it turns out, is played by a man. So we've got a gender swap here. Like, we have Morioka playing a guy and Lily being played... Sorry, and this guy playing Lily. And immediately you get some interesting implications because of this as far as the gender roles are concerned. I mean, I admittedly am leaping a bit here by assuming the sexuality of both Morioka and the gentleman in question. By which I mean I'm assuming they're hetero.
Right.
But if you think of it this way, there's the scene with the sea anemone in which they're getting quite chill with each other in there. More like, you know, that kind of, oh God, we're really close to each other, kind of thing. But if you play it in your head, like, the guy doesn't know that Morioka is a woman playing a guy character, and conversely, Morioka doesn't know that Lily is played by a guy. So this is all platonic, at least I think it, I feel it is. It's intended as platonic, but there's an odd conflation here of how they would act in real life with how they would in the game. And then, of course, you get set up for the twist, which will come at some point when these two meet and realize who each other is.
Right.
And then, as a result of that, the rules of play are completely different.
It's interesting that in that scene, when they're in the anemone, you do have that kind of awkward, like, laughter and a little bit of bashfulness about being in close contact, despite, like, and both neither player knows the identity or gender or whatever of the other player on the other end, but it seems like they're still feeling that feeling. I think because they're so, I don't know, there's like a point where they become invested in the character and the fact that their male character is with, you know, a female character, and it just seems like that, you know, you're not thinking about, well, the person controlling Hayashi is a boy, is a man, and I'm a man, and I'm not into other men, or, like, she's not thinking, here's Lily, a woman, and I need to be, I'm thinking about what I, Morioka, am attracted to. It just seems like They're totally thinking about themselves as the character. Like, they're thinking about the role characters.
Play.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Like, the element of, like, role play kind of and experiencing real emotions as the people that are doing the role playing, like, because of something that the characters are doing. Like, that's a neat thing that can go on in human beings and how storytelling can affect you.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really cool.
There is definitely a bit of roleplay there, but a lot of the dialogue between Lily and Hayashi is also just about their lives. Or rather, Lily does speak mostly about, like, I just want to play the game to get away from work. The Guildmaster speaks to Hayashi Morioka later on and says the same. There's a moment later on in the episode that I found really telling, and I think it's going to be one of the central theses of the show that's going to get tested and probably debunked as it goes along. So, to offer some context, what...
Does it have anything to do with an elephant?
Well, there is an elephant in the room. Hey! That's actually literally what happens. An elephant just bursts into the room. And then this elephant monster... For some reason, and I don't know if this is a joke at the expense of, like, really cheap, like, Asian MMOs that don't have proper, like, you know, sound files or resources, but the elephant roars and it sounds like a cougar.
It's amazing.
It's great.
Amazing.
And it looks so goofy as well.
It blasts snow at them through its trunk, like...
It's a Pokemon. Why?
It's just... It is, and it also appears to be wearing a hairpiece.
It wouldn't surprise me. All of the monsters in Fruits the Mail, like, that I've seen that so far are the goofiest, like, Sesame Street-esque nonsense ever, and it's great.
It is
they're
really
so,
great.
They're so placid looking. Like, the rats are, or the Ratty Cake one. Great.
Even the big, like, werewolf monster that they cut to briefly, he gets sort of hutified when Hayashi runs away because he doesn't know the controls.
Ah, he's a keyboard turner, that's what it is. Oh, what a scrub. But anyway, the thing is, right, this scene, right, of the elephant is preceded by Hayashi Morioka deciding that what they're going to do, they're going to grind and get a very ultra-rare cosmetic item called a crystal rose and give it to Lily for Christmas, which is sweet and nice, and that's cool. This results, unfortunately, in Hayashi avoiding Lily for quite some time, so that way he can try and accomplish this in secret. Because he doesn't want to find out, like, if, you know, I'm sharing this quest with you, and the reward is quite clearly states of the Crystal Rose.
Yeah.
Same as you would when you buy anything for anyone in real life as a birthday present or a Christmas present. You want to keep the wrapping on first hand.
And you also want to, like, earn it yourself, I think, you know? Because if she's taking part in it, then, like, it will be weird. For him to be like, here's this thing that you helped me win.
Yes,
that is
you're right.
Partly your, that would be a weird gift.
Exactly. But because, of course, Morioka, or Hayashi, I'll just call it Morioka for the sake of argument, doesn't tell Lily about this, Lily gets a bit dejected. To the point where she's sat in a bar, like, on her own, and she's drinking a cocktail, which I thought was quite classy. I was like, what the hell? Did Jill Stingray mix that one up? I could go for that. but the Guildmaster intervenes in this when he and Hayashi Morioka go to this dungeon, and we get two rules laid out here which are going to become important later, I think. First one, no romance between guild members. None. We're keeping it chaste. Here's the loot for you, the chastity belt of +6 to cop blocking. You can't, you know, no funny business. None of it. But the other thing, which is what Hayashi or Morioka, it's important that she's saying this, by the way, responds to this, makes a clear distinction. Real life is real life, and MMO is MMO.
Right.
Distinct, separate things. The Venn diagram for these two, they do not overlap in the slightest. Or do they? The moment I saw that line in this episode, the first time I watched it, I immediately thought, right, that's this show's mission statement. This is what you'll refer back to for all of the various moments in which that gets bent or broken.
It is going to test that. Like, it's the show is setting out, I think, to... Well, I mean, I don't know if it's, like, necessarily an idea show. Like, it might be, you know, the romance might be the thing here, but But I think in pursuing that, it is going to test that whole idea of the separation between online game and real life, for sure. I agree.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's an idea show, but I think you can have elements of that in there. You can certainly test things while handling the romance bit. So what then happens is that Hayashi just gets a different rose. It's a coloured one rather than the crystal one. Gives it to Lily. We get a scene set that becomes important in later episodes where they sit on a tree and talk about things. Morioka is revealed to be incredibly socially awkward, even online. Like, what do I say? What do I do? I don't know what I'm doing. And so, because this is in the run-up to Christmas, Morioka unfortunately also leaves her fridge completely bare, apart from a single pepperami sausage and a pudding.
So funny.
Of all things to leave in there.
I know.
So she ventures outside, goes to the local supermarket, and this poor woman, like, I really get the feeling that she just wants to let loose and just be more herself, because she's walking in, she gets all the stuff she wants. So beer, snacks, ready meals, you name it.
She's very mad that the store is so crowded with couples because it's Christmas. She's just grumbling about it the whole time. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
I may also have done that.
I have been myself many a time. I mean, Christmas is one of those unfortunately obnoxious times of years where if you're in a tough place, it can be smothering, just as it can feel almost like people are rubbing your nose in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no surprise that when, to get slightly more serious here about what we're talking about, in the UK, when we have Christmas television on the public services, so with BBC and the ITV channels, as well as Channel 4 and Channel 5, when you're watching them, you'll often see a little insert at the bottom of the TV show saying something to the effect of, if you're not feeling particularly festive at Christmas and want to talk, please dial this free phone number, which is nice. But it's not surprising. And given that Morioka's whole reason, I think, for actually playing this game is just to connect with people, or at least just to distract her, because it's escapism.
Yeah.
That's what this game is. It's escapism for her to have to venture out into that place and just be smothered with all these people, like all these cute girls going, Merry Christmas and all that. But the poor woman, right? She goes up to the counter and she spots what I think is a chicken wing in the counter, like the last one of Christmas chicken. And because it's Japan, fried chicken is the big thing in Christmas, from what I understand. I mean, we get turkey over here and stuff in. They want KFC. And you know what? All power to them.
For those who don't know, Christmas in Japan is a much less family-centric holiday, and it's a lot more akin to Valentine's Day in the West. It is much more a couple's holiday, even though the decorations will remain the same. You know, you see the fish with Christmas hats on, and you see Lily dressing up in her Christmas outfit. The country sort of treats it, they don't have any of the religious and you know, familial kind of undertones with it. It is a lot more of a couple's holiday, and it's a holiday that young people, I think, really enjoy because of that. So yeah, it's slightly kind of skewed differently.
She spots this, and the stomach starts growling, and this is one of the things where I just get the impression, like, it wouldn't be very, dare I say, and I'm not agreeing with this, I'm just stating it, ladylike for her to be seen grabbing that for herself, this Christmas chicken in there, you know. But she wants it.
Yes.
And she goes for it. But unfortunately, she speaks at the exact same time as someone else. That would be Sakurai, Lily's player, who is in the same store. And I love Morioka's reaction to this. She turns to him and puts on a face that's just priceless.
What?
like it's like the face I imagine Julius Caesar would have made when Brutus stabbed him in the back. It was great. She looks in with such wonderful face, like, how dare you steal my chicken?
Yes.
I will not stand for this.
And she ended
you will
up
ruin
getting
the
it.
Day.
She ended up walking away with the chicken.
She got
very embarrassed.
I bless her.
Poor thing.
Just bless her, honestly. But that, to my knowledge or memory, is pretty much the episode at that point. We finish off learning. We've got the setup. We know about Morioka. We've got hints about what's gone on. We know, for example, about her leaving the job. The fact that she wept a little bit after, you know, meeting Lily and getting the friend request.
Mm-hmm.
Some sensitivity issues here. A thing we let to mention is there's a brief flashback that Morioka has about the previous MMO she played.
Yeah, it makes her cry uncontrollably. Like, well, I say cry. That makes it sound like she's weeping. She's unconsciously, she tears up when thinking about it.
Which I think will become important later on. We learn who Sakurai is. We learn a bit more about the premise of the world. It's a good start for the show. It certainly got me hooked. One interesting thing to note that I should say right here as well about Sakurai is we immediately learn that he's got a job and he's a fairly normal looking guy for anime characters anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, glasses wearing, shaggy hair. He doesn't look unkempt. He doesn't look untidy. He doesn't seem like, you know, he's doesn't take care of himself. He's a regular guy, but he's playing this MMO. And I think that one of the other things I think that this show might be trying to do a little bit, not to wholly, or at least of its whole intent, is possibly to destigmatize the notion of what online games mean to people. Like,
maybe. I guess that's more possible with this, since it's a Jose book. Well, since it's based on a Jose book. But yeah, I mean, I was thinking about, like, just anime. Like, I think the market, like, who's going to watch anime, I'm not sure if they have any stereotypes or stigmas about online. I think they are the online gamers.
Hmm. Well, no, I suppose not. And merely my experience with anime that focus on MMOs is limited entirely regressively to Sword Art Online. Which
I think regardless of whether or not the intention on the part of the author is there, I think it's a well-made point that Sakurai can function in this way as a character.
Yeah, and we sympathize with Morioka as well. Like, we learn very, like, we learn about what, you know, she's quit. She's upset the fact she's quit. She just wants some connection. We sympathize with her. We find her warm and entertaining and very human for that matter as well. And also, like, when we meet, there's a scene in which Lily is at the bar, as we mentioned before, where she mentions to one of her colleagues about, or one of her guild members about, Morioka, like, you know, not spending time with her. But there are people there just chatting, shooting the breeze about real life. Like, one says he's just on a break from getting driving home. Like, they're not strictly talking about in-world stuff here, like discussing, like, the latest raid or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think that I want to see the show do, hopefully over time, is I want to see if it will assert, like, overtly or not, a comparison between the value of real life interaction, like when you meet someone in person, and interaction online. Online interaction will always be an inherent disadvantage simply because of body language not being a factor. Body language is a big part of how we communicate. It's been proven. It's like the majority of what constitutes communication and conversation. So you're always going to have that as a thing that's going to work against it. But that's just how a message is delivered. The content of what you're interactions are online, I still think is incredibly valuable. I mean, to speak from my own history here, like, when I played World of Warcraft, which, for those of you who are not in the know, is where my handle Shaden originates from, is the name of my undead rogue and then my undead death knight. I think that from what I've seen from the people I've interacted with, there were a lot of them who found a great solace in playing with people online this manner, where they could escape and be someone over themselves and yet still also be themselves in some way. I've actually had the pleasure of meeting people from World of Warcraft in real life. It was the very first get-together I ever had with a gaming community that I had never met in person before and never seen.
Mm.
Involving, like, we went to a pub, went on a pub crawl of sorts. I chatted with one of them who was a Hell's Angel. He was a right punk.
Oh, God.
Not on my best day would I have ever challenged him to a fight. He looked hard as nails. And there was another guy who he was very well spoken, camp sounding, darkest sense of humor I'd ever heard. Like, some of the jokes he was coming out with, probably a bit on PC these days, but they were funny. All great people though. That gave me the confidence to meet more people from online.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I still enjoy talking with people. I mean, hell, how many times have you and me talked about stuff that's not to do with anime, Doc?
Yeah, quite a few.
There you go. So I think that there's a nice message already established in this show about, you know, people can still interact and get meaning and value from that interaction, even if there isn't in person.
Mm-hmm.
But As you probably have guessed from the show's premise, though, what's going to happen when Morioka and Sakurai actually meet in person? Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, man. I know. I know. It's how are they going to handle each other's foibles? That is something that I'm thinking about and that we'll probably touch on in future episodes, I think. Not probably, for sure.
Oh, yes.
So I think to close this one out, we can each give a quick final thought, and then we rate each episode on a scale of 1 to 5. I'm going to say that I really like this episode. I think it set a great tone for the show. Very engaging, very cute. I love the way the show looks, nice and bright. I like the color palette. The characters, adorable. Raises interesting kind of points to think about that we talked about, and it's just really a lot of fun with a character in Morioka that's really fun to root for. I'm going to give this episode 4 convenience store beers out of 5.
What a way to say it. I'm in agreement. You always have like the 3-episode rule, but I think the first episode is always something that's going to get you going right away. And there's some very wonderful craft choices, like the very understated way in which we introduce Morioka in her apartment. Like, there's no... We get an inner monologue from her later about her saying that she's become a neat and that she's chosen this deliberately. That's not until, like, nearly the halfway point of the episode. So what we learn, like, is mostly from sight and sounds. Like, there's no one there. She has a... I wouldn't know if you'd call it a dakimura or not. Like, it's a hook thing, like, with a cat head on it.
Right.
I don't know what you call it. I'm sure some people would educate me on that. But she has that. There's no one there waiting for her.
I love that hug pillow.
I think that we get there's a lot of like really interesting creative decisions here on how things are directed and framed and what's said versus what not said as well. Mm-hmm. It's genuinely funny. Like, Umaru is meant to be a comedy, and I found it to be one of the most shrill, ear-piercing pieces of shit I've ever heard. This, however, irrespective of the fact that the character is of a similar age to me, I mean, you might think that age would be a reason why I'd hate Umaru. No, I just hate Umaru because he's an absolute shithead. But age not isn't a factor. There's a lot of nice little jokes here about just her reactions and also how it's handled in the game world as well. I do agree with you also about the art. I think that some of the facial expressions, like, the art comes across a little simplistic in some places with facial expressions, but I don't mind that. Mm-mm. Because they're always usually done to great effect. Like the little curved mouth that Hayashi makes when the Guildmaster says no one knows who the gender is in real life.
Right.
Like, you know.
Yes. It's appealing.
It is, yeah. I can't really fault the opening of this show. And I'm not really sure what I would suggest to improve on it, to be quite honest. I suppose the biggest criticism I could make is that because it has done so well, it sets my expectations higher. It means that, you know, am I going to have the Kado effects with this? If I don't get a moment at the end of MMO where Morioka and Sakurai don't, like, you know, hold hands and walk off into the sunset or kiss, I will flip my desk over, I will cancel my Crunchyroll account, I'll throw my PC out the window, and I'll live a life of a Luddite. I'll be done.
This is extreme. This is very extreme. I'm not sure I endorse this bet.
Do you think it might not happen?
Listen, I think it's going... I think you'll get it, but that's a lot to risk over anime. Anime, as you say, has let me down before.
Ah, this is true. You're not wrong, Doc. You're not wrong. But on my rating scale, I will give this a 4 out of 5 cans of convenience store lager and also a shot of brandy as well.
Ooh, lovely. Lovely. For just, that one's for the holidays.
Hell yes.
So I guess we hope to be, you know, we've got a little ways to catch up. So we hope to be bringing you these in a fashion such that we can catch up with where the show is before the show ends. That's the goal. So look for these in the feed on the regular.
Indeed. Thank you all very much for listening, folks. Hope you enjoyed the new format. If you do have any thoughts or comments or the like on how this has played out, by all means, let us know. If you do want to check out Recovery of the MMO Junkie, it is on Crunchyroll. I would, so far, very highly recommend it, give it a look. And until next time, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
Yes, indeed. Take care.
I stole your line.
I'm okay with it. I'll do it.